Hi, I'm Deborah Lindgad, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and how to live toxic free. I'm feeling so great this morning. I don't know if it's just because it's springtime and the sun is shining and it's 80 degrees outside here in Florida, in Clearwater, Florida, or what's going on today. Maybe it's just because it's April. Maybe it's just because things are going well. It's a great day for me this morning. It's Tuesday. No, it's not. It's Wednesday, April 2nd, and I'm getting a note that my mic is...
I'm going to restart. Hold on.
Okay. I'm hoping that sounds better. I can't tell from here. No. Well, we need to fix this first.
Sorry. You know what? I really... Okay, try that.
Yeah, it's just a mechanical difficulty. All right, so, and I'll tell you what it is. It's just a little place where the cable hooks into the mic. There's nothing wrong with the mic, but there's just, it falls out. Anyway, today we're going to have a wonderful show. We always have wonderful shows. In fact, you can go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com and you can listen to all the shows that I've done for the past. It's been almost a year. Coming up on April 22nd. It will be a year of Toxic Free Talk Radio. And... So all the shows are archived. On Fridays, instead of doing a live show, I play some shows from the past. But every single one of them is wonderful. Every single one of them has great information, and you'll get to meet the people who are actually creating a toxic-free world. Today we're going to talk about linen, and my guest is Tricia Rose. She's the founder of Rough Linen, and she not only makes the things that she offers out of natural fibers, natural linen, but she hand sews them. These are not sewn on big industrial machines. She sews all these products herself. Hi, Tricia.
Hello. Hi, Deborah.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, but I have to say I do have ladies who help me. I don't sew everything myself.
Okay, but you're all sewing, like, on sewing machines or by hand or something like that, right?
We have a very small little workshop, but it started on my dining room table. So it really is one of those mustard seed things.
Yes, yes. Well, tell us, I want to hear everything about what you're doing, but before we start talking about your products, tell us your story of how you got started in doing this.
My mother was a health food nut and a natural liver, and I know that she always she cared very much about where things came from and what they did. So we had a vegetable garden. We always ate brown bread. We were allowed to have sweets or cookies or puddings only if we made them ourselves, which I think was a terribly clever rule. And then
I do that myself. You know, when I was making a transition from eating garbage food I always ate good food. My mother was a health food nut too. She used to make what we would now call a green smoothie. She called it a green drink. And to get us to drink it, yes, she would put one of those horrible red, it didn't taste horrible, but a horrible red maraschino cherry. After you drink this, she put it in the bottom so we'd have to drink it in order to get the cherry. She was trying to be helpful, and I think that at the time nobody knew how bad FDNC red maraschino cherry was.
But Deborah, I'm a great believer in intention.
Yes, me too.
if your intentions are pure, then some good has to come of it.
I think so, too. And so when I decided that I was really going to eat natural and all healthy and organic and not eat so much packaged foods, my rule about any dessert at all, except for ice cream, any cookies or cakes or anything like that, if I was going to eat them, I had to make them myself. and I had to make them out of organic ingredients and natural sweeteners. And that really cut down on eating the junk food. And I got to have my treat if I actually stuck it through and, you know, actually made it.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good strategy. So she let you eat homemade cookies, good.
Yes. And when I was 13, because she couldn't sew at all, my grandmother sewed, and I used to work the treadle for her machine. I mean, don't ask me how you get somebody else to work the treadle, but I remember it clearly. And so my mother sent me on a sewing course in the summer holidays. And when I came back, I had one beautiful, flouncy dress with big puffed sleeves and a cummerbund to show for it. And I then made her clothes and mine and my sister's, and a large proportion of them. And then later, when I was at university, I wanted extra income. I sewed clothes for other people. And so I've always sewn. And all through my marriage, I've sewn as well, because my husband and I work together. But his hours tend to be longer. And I've always gravitated towards beautiful, pure fabrics. And when I found a linen pillowcase in my grandmother's linen closet, I had to clear out her house after 67 years of continuous occupation. My aunt went into a nursing home. And so I went to this little stone cottage that I've known all my life. And amongst all of the beautiful linens, still some of them wrapped in their cellophane, pure, beautiful linen sheets, I found this one neglected, hand-woven, natural-colored homespun. And it hadn't been at all respected. It said someone had put a casing into it and a drawstring, so I assume it was used as a shoe bag or as a laundry bag.
Uh-huh.
And it was, I have a vague memory of an old spinning wheel, but I couldn't find it. But I knew that this was from my great-great-grandmother, who had lived in the country in Scotland. And it was around about 1840, which was a point at which people still grew a field of flax for their own use, and then they spun it and wove it.
Oh.
And so I brought it with me to America, and I kept lavender in it. But about 4 years ago, I found a manufactured linen which had exactly the same texture. So obviously not hand-woven, but it has precisely the same texture and color and handle. And I thought that I would make myself a duvet cover. And I did, and people started admiring it. So I made a few more. And then I had one glass of wine too many one Sunday night and thought, I need to share this with the world. And so I just wrote a little piece about it, and I sent it to a design blog called The Modelista, never thinking that they would run the piece the next day. And suddenly I had 10 orders. And that was how it started in 2009.
Well, that was exactly the right place. I love Remodelista and Gardenista.
Yeah.
I get the Gardenista email every day, and I always read it because it's so beautiful. About orienting.
It's a bright spot in the inbox, isn't it?
It is. It really is. And I highly recommend it, gardenista.com. And it really has a being aligned with nature viewpoint and bringing nature inside and using natural materials and all those kinds of things. It's just right in alignment with me. So they ran it the very next day, of course, because you just are, that is just what they do. And we need to go to break, so we'll talk more when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Tricia Rose. She's the founder of Rough Linen. It's the name of her website. It's roughlinen.com, and she has absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous natural linen bedding and curtains and other things for the home. And we'll be right back to talk with her more. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Tricia Rose, founder of Rough Linen. That's at roughlinen.com, and she makes gorgeous things out of beautiful linen. Tricia, I know that you started your company because you were inspired by the fabric and the history and the possibilities, but I'm doing this show because I'm looking for things that are not toxic, which of course yours is. Is there anything you want to tell us about regular fabrics and toxic chemicals?
I know the, I mean, I really have honed in so much on linen, and I've never liked synthetic materials. I mean, that said, what would we do without Lycra? I don't know quite what. Yes, I feel like, you know, if I look at my underwear, I'm definitely in a state of confusion because, yes. But for big items, like, you know, sofas and beds, it's appalling how toxic they can be. And I have a number of these in my bonnet. One of them is box springs. I do not know why anyone in the world has a box spring in their bed, because they, I mean, first of all, they're sort of very big and bulky and ugly.
Yeah.
And if you have sprung laminated wooden slats, like the very expensive European ones, it gives far more bounce in a narrow profile. And then again, mattresses. Since I came to America, first of all, I noticed how enormous the beds were, and then the mattresses have kept on growing with the advent of pillow tops and things.
Yes.
And you have to be so careful. You know, all of that bulk of plastic and rubberizers and dead skin cells, why do we want to have it near us? You know, a slimmer profile mattress, and preferably of natural materials, makes so much more sense than the sort of bed you need a little ladder to climb into. I think that would have health risks quite apart from what you breathe. I mean, what happens when you fall out?
That's a very good point. I actually slept, I was house sitting for a friend of mine who had one of those beds that you had to climb up a little ladder to get in it. Really, I did, and it was difficult to get in and out of. I myself sleep on a wood flat bed with a very maybe 5 inches of mattress, and it's all stuffed with wool and natural fiber sheets and everything. Everything about my bed is natural, but I understand what you're saying, and I do very much prefer the natural stuffed mattress on top of the wood slats in terms of comfort.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, it is far more comfortable. And then, I mean, obviously, there's a hierarchy of bedding. And I would say right at the bottom is nylon and polyester. Although polyester is actually the strongest cheating that you can have. You know, polyester is next door to indestructible, but it pulls and it looks dingy and it doesn't feel nice. And it has a sort of a clamminess next to your skin.
Yeah.
Then you have sort of polycotton mixes. Then you have cotton, which of course is beautiful. But the way that cotton is produced is not beautiful. Cotton has a very high use of irrigation and of pesticides because the little ball is a fruit. So that caterpillars and things like it, whereas linen is the stem of a plant, and so it's much less likely to be attacked by insects. It's, you know, this big, tough, long, old stem. You might have trouble with the odd dormouse or harvest nut. So there are far fewer pesticides used in linen. It's basically a weed, and it is traditionally grown in places where it hasn't needed irrigation. What it does need is a reliably damp autumn. And when it's harvested And quite often it's pulled up by the roots by machine, not by hand anymore. And then it is laid in stooks in the field. And it's allowed to just sit there and get damp. It's called field retting. And what happens is that the softer stuff rots away from the long stem. It smells terrible. But then that is harvested and processed. And the reason that linen is relatively expensive is it needs to go through so many hand mechanical processes after that. It needs to be, you whack it with a little stick, and then you drag it through a bed of nails, and it turns into long hanks that look like long blonde hair. And then it's unwoven.
But it's all a very natural process. As you're talking about, all these things are happening in the field and by hand. It's not something that requires a lot of chemicals and things like that. I just want to describe. That linen. Linen is the name of the fabric that comes from the flax plant. And
that's
if you've ever seen a flax, now I actually grew up with flax plants in my front yard, and they grew quite large. They were variegated flax, little yellow and green flax. But if you've never seen a flax plant or you don't know what it is, it is like a bunch of like blades, big wide blades, like a blade of grass, but very like on steroids, very big. And that the flax plants we had when I was growing up were maybe 3 or 4 feet high, and there was a bunch, and then all these stems, these leaves would come out, and oh, I see we need to go to break, so I'll continue my story when we come back. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and today we're talking about linen fabric with Tricia Rose, founder of Rough Linen, and she has got the most beautiful linen bedding you've ever seen. We'll be right back. Here we go. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Tricia Rose, founder of Rough Linen. She's at roughlinen.com, and you can go there and see her beautiful things that she makes from linen with hand sewing. So to just finish up my story about the linen plant, you can actually see, I remember as a child, I would pull the leaves off the linen plant, and I rip them so that I pull them apart in these long strands. I thought that was a lot of fun, and I had no idea it was linen at the time. But you can actually see the fiber in the flax plant.
Oh, yes. Yes. And one of the beautiful things is that, unfortunately, in the United States, there is no fiber flax grown, but there's a lot of nutritional flax. I mean, flax seed is from linen. It's a wonderful plant. And anyone who's driven through fields of flax knows that if a cloud comes over, the field goes green, and when the cloud goes away, the flowers open again, and they're blue, the most beautiful ethereal sky blue.
Oh, how beautiful.
It's a lovely sight. Yes.
I've never seen that. Go ahead.
Well, apparently you can't use... I mean, it's a matter of economics, I'm sure. You can't use the seed flax for fiber. But there used to be a flourishing flax. And I mean, it's what people used to grow. There was, in Washington State and in Oregon in particular, there was a very flourishing flax industry. And interesting stories that went with it. Mount Vernon, there was... the flax grown and woven. And the death knell for flax in America was slave-grown cotton. So flax couldn't compete with cheap slave-grown cotton.
There, you know, what's coming to mind is Lindsay Woolsey. Was that linen? Linen and wool?
Lindsay Woolsey is linen and wool woven together.
Yes.
And it's... I mean, what a wonderful name. And it's one
I know,
of the things,
I love it.
I mean, if you read in the Bible, there are a lot of fulminations against mixing wool with linen. And, of course, pure linen is mentioned over and over again. You know, pure white linen, it was what you used as a shroud. It was the priests in the temple wore it. And I've read a lot of stuff on the internet about the purity and healthful vibrations of linen, which I find very interesting. It doesn't, I mean, I love the linen for itself, so it doesn't... It doesn't sway me in any way, except that I find it fascinating that there's such a history going back so far. In fact, the oldest, not woven, the oldest spun linen fibers ever found were in a cave. They have been dated because of the dye that was used in them. They are 65,000 years old.
Wow.
So it's very likely that people, you know, there was this sort of ribby plant, and they just, you know, twisted it. It
takes
a lot of
sense. Just kind of lends itself to being a fiber that, you know, that
absolutely.
You can... Absolutely. Yeah. You know, also another thing is that linen is traditionally the preferred fiber for clothing in hot climates, that it breathes really well. And here in Florida, I think that linen is actually the correct fiber for us to wear. And so does it grow in all kinds of different climates? Like, could I grow linen in my backyard?
I don't think Florida's noted for long damp autumns, is it? you might have a bit of trouble. So I mean, think of Ireland, Irish linen, Belgian linen.
So it needs to be northern.
Yes. And in those northern latitudes, you know, a short but very intense growing season. It has, I think, a 60-day growing season. And then if you haven't got reliable dampness, you do need to damp it down. And it was also put into what we call retting ponds and retted that way, although it needed a bit more supervision. And if you left it too long, it just went away.
Now, you have...
But if you want to be wearing linen, yes. It's cool to the touch. It's wonderful, just wonderful to sleep under. Because it retains a sort of wholesomeness and crispness,
even
better than cotton. Sometimes people who come to linen after cotton say that the handle is harsh because cotton tends to be much smoother. You have to try them both to find out what you like for yourself. But
well,
I'm now at the stage where I can't stand anything remotely slippery or clingy.
I myself love linen. It's my favorite fiber. And I was in a store. We have a store here in the Tampa Bay area where I live that was made as kind of a homage to England from somebody who had gone to England and spent a lot of time there, and he wanted to come back and have this store be like a store in England. And I've been to England, so I know what that's like. And it's my favorite place to be in the entire area here where I live. And I went in there one day, and they had a whole rack of linen throws, I guess, you know, that you would toss on the sofa. And and they were in all these different colors, and they had been washed a million times, and they were so soft. And I just wrapped one of those around me, and I didn't want to take it off. And I didn't have the $200 that day to buy it, but I went back because I couldn't stop thinking about it. When I had the $200, I went back, and they didn't have them anymore. And I was so disappointed because it was like from that moment on, that was all I wanted to sleep in. I mean, I sleep on cotton flannel sheets. So they're very cozy and comfy and soft. But when I wrapped that linen around my body, it was like, yes, this is my fiber. This is what I want to sleep on. This is what I want to wrap myself in. It just so attuned with my body. It was amazing.
Yeah, and it's so versatile because obviously if you iron it, it becomes crisp and very, very smooth. And new linen, you need to wash it and to use it for it to soften down. And it becomes the most beautifully soft, light, embracing, tactile quality that you could possibly hope mm-hmm. for.
Mm-hmm. It really does. It just is. It's a pretty amazing thing. Well, we need to go to
break. And of course, it's easy to care for too. You just wash it, and it's very important not to over dry linen, because that will shorten the life of the fibers. It'll break it down. It doesn't like a dry heat.
Mm-hmm.
So you can lay off the ironing.
Well, we're going to go to break again. When we come back, we're going to hear all about what Tricia makes at Rough Linen. And she has different kinds of linen fabrics. We're going to hear about that. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Datt. And we're talking about linen today with Tricia Rose of Rough Linen. That's roughlinen.com. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Datt, and my guest today is Tricia Rose, founder of Rough Linen. That's at roughlinen.com. And Tricia, tell us about these different kinds of linen fabrics. What's the difference between them? You have four different types.
It's all linen. It depends where it's grown, how you can use it. And in fact, just about every part of the plant is used. It can be the tougher, shorter fibers are made into rope. And I'm extremely thrilled that now it's legal to grow hemp in California. There was a ridiculous ban on it because it looks exactly like marijuana, because it's the same plant family, but it's quite ridiculous. You couldn't grow this absolutely harmless, useful plant just because of the way it looked. You know, that it would confuse people. So, and hemp and linen are related. And I'm looking forward. If there is hemp grown in California, I would like to sew with it. I shall see how I can do that. But linen, from the very best linen is grown in Belgium and Ireland. But the trouble is, because it's uneconomic to process, the reason that you get such beautiful linen out of that is it's Belgium, France, Ireland. That entire strip, that latitudinal strip, and France and Luxembourg, they're heavily subsidized there. Mm. And then as you go further north, there is good linen also woven there, but it tends to be the more utilitarian linen. And there used to be a thriving linen industry in Scotland, in Poland. Lithuania didn't plant a single hectare of linen last year, not one. And they were big, big producers. So there will not be a shortage, because the price will simply go up to cope with this.
Yeah,
but it does seem like something where it's one of the places where the government could actually do some good by allowing us to grow linen.
Wow, they should. They absolutely should. So there's these four different kinds. Are they different by, like, if I were wanting to choose to buy some bed linens, and you have Orkney, Smooth Linen, St. Bart's, and Myriad, how would I know what the difference is in those? Like, which one would I want to choose?
Yeah. Orkney is my original and best-loved linen. That's the one which has the homespun texture. And I have three colors now. I have Orkney Natural, which is the one that my heart belongs to. Orkney White, which is a creamy white. And I have Black, which I used to make into pinafores, because I didn't mean to go into clothing, but I made a pinafore for myself. And it's been selling like hotcakes. So a pinafore is like an apron. It's based on an old Amish tanning apron, and you slip it over your head, a strap across at the back, and you don't have to tie it. So if your hands are sticky, or you don't have to mess about behind you. And it's a wonderful garment, because you have two great big pockets So my iPhone is in one pocket, everything else is in the other. And it's just a very useful garment.
Yes.
But anyway, sorry, that is Orkney, and that is the toughest of them all. Then I have St. Bart's, which is very like the Orkney, it's just a little bit lighter. And the reason I carry St. Bart's is that it's the only one I can get in color. And so I make curtains in particular out of that, and some duvet covers. Of course, most of the people who are buying my linen go for natural or white. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And then Myriad is an off-white open weave curtain material. So it's like a sheer, and I only can use it for curtains. It's too loose for anything else. I couldn't resist it.
I'm looking at the pictures on your site as you're describing these, and the Myriad ones, really, it's diaphanous. I love that word, diaphanous.
I got a lot of teasing about the photographs on the website because I was stroking the curtain material, and I love the texture. And I love the way all linen curtains move in the breeze. They mm-hmm. are just wonderful, the way they float. But people were saying, oh, Tricia, you're in love with a curtain. And then smooth linen is woven for me to my specification, double width, because I wanted to make sheets, and you cannot have a sheet with a seam in it. So it has to be at least 120 inches wide. Mine, it varies. I've learned such a lot about the finishing of linen. It varies between 123 and 128 inches wide, depending on the batch. And I have that in natural, and I have it in white. And when people ask me if my fabrics are natural, the whites have been bleached. There's no way I can get around it. It has been bleached. So it has been treated chemically. And the colors have been bleached before they've been dyed.
Mm-hmm.
For people who do have chemical sensitivities, I would send them to the natural.
Yes, it's nice that you have both those choices to make. And I see some of the other things that you have besides the bedding and curtains. Is I see there's a shower curtain here. And various table runners and napkins and placemats and things like that. So you can just look around her site and see all these lovely things to bring linen into your home. I also
the napkins are a wonderful.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
The napkins are wonderful for everyday use because since you don't have to iron them, you're not fussing around. I make them a generous size, and they've got. The texture gives you plenty of traction if you've got a bit of mustard on your chin, and you just use them every day and wash them. Don't iron them. Don't give yourself that amount of work. And they look very attractive. I use the old fashioned napkin rings so that we can tell whose napkin is whose. So we don't change them every day. That's too much like hard work.
Oh, yes. I use cloth napkins, and I actually have some linen napkins. I'm looking on your page here, and I looked at this picture of the restaurant, and I went, oh, that looks familiar. I used to live in West Marin in Forest Knolls, and I have been to here. This restaurant is there in Olema. I know that building. I've been in that room.
Isn't it a beautiful room? Yes.
It is. It is very
beautiful. I was very honored that they chose my linen, and it goes completely with the ethos of, because it's local.
Absolutely, they would be perfect. So I just wanted to talk a little bit. We're almost near the end of the show, but I wanted to talk a little bit about handmade things. Could you just speak to the importance of handmade items in your home?
I think the real importance of handmade items is to the person who makes them, because there's such a disconnect if you don't create anything, you're robbing yourself of an interaction with the rest of the world I think it's almost, you know, the meaning of our day-to-day reality. But I would include in that gardening or looking after animals or pets, as well as potting and sewing and knitting. And even making up your face can be an art form.
Oh, of course.
Yes. Or one of my favorites. I used to love to braid my daughter's hair. And I would do, you know, how little girls often have some quite twisted it. So I would do that. It's almost like cornrowing, you know, the sort you do on the tail of a horse. And it would keep her hair beautifully neat all day. And I felt when she went out through the door, she looked as though somebody loved her because somebody had taken the time to braid her hair. And that, I mean, that sort of everydayness it's an art form for anyone, and men too. You know, it isn't just if you're a woman in a domestic context, and heaven knows most of us work now. But for men to work with their hands, and women. I'm on Gandhi's side. You know, he used to sit and weave when he needed to think.
Yes. One of the things that I do is I make desserts from natural, organic and natural sweeteners, and now I make them gluten-free, but I bring them to whenever there's a potluck or something. I'm always bringing things that are handmade as opposed to going and buying something, because so many people just go buy something and bring it to the potluck. Yeah. And I remember one day I had made these cookies, and I had just kind of patted them with my fingers instead of rolling them out with the rolling pin. And a friend of mine picked one up, and she said, "I can see Deborah's fingerprints in the cookies." And I almost cried when she said that, because it's like that's what we should have our lives be about, is to see that love in the products that we use every day. And I'm going to run out of time saying this here, so I'm going to say it really fast. But like my wool bed, I know the girls that sewed it. I know where the sheep came from. And I know when I order your sheets that you sewed them, and that's going to be special to me.
Yeah. I want to know where everything comes from.
I need to stop because we're really out of time. They're going to cut us off.
Thank you so much, Deborah.
Thank you so much for being on the show. I love what you're doing, and good luck to you with everything. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd. This is Toxic, and bye.